From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
You can have a million Black shows in development on your network. Have you ever had a person of color to your home as a guest? All I'm saying is that there is money to be made off of us and by us that has nothing to do with I've opened my mind.
As the creator of the Starz drama Power, Courtney Kemp is one of the few women of color running her own TV show. Amid the push for increased diversity in the industry, she's heard a lot of network executives talking the talk, but she hasn't seen too many walking the walk. Kemp tells us how she went from being a Shakespeare-loving kid in affluent Westport, Connecticut, to running a gritty, violent drama with the rapper 50 Cent. But first on the news banter, NBC News misses another sexual misconduct story. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW. I'm joined by my partner in banter, Matt Bellany of The Hollywood Reporter, who is taking a break from his vacation, sneaking off to banter a little bit. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
Let's talk a little bit about the Fox News developments in these past few days. Bill Shein, who was the former top Fox News executive, co-president, he resigned in May 2017 amidst all of the scandal surrounding Roger Ailes and this environment at the network of sexual harassment. And they really made a systematic effort to cover for Roger Ailes and spy on people who dared to criticize or might be liabilities. Bill Shein was involved with a lot of that. He left, as I said, in 2017. Apparently ready to be the communications director for, guess who, Donald Trump. That relationship between Fox News and Donald Trump goes forward very cozy.
It seems like Sean Hannity is a big connector here. I mean, the president obviously trusts a lot of what Hannity says. Hannity apparently recommended Bill Shein and has been speaking on his behalf in Trump's ear. And now you have full circle. The former chief programmer at Fox News is going to be chief programming the White House.
Yeah. Meanwhile, back at Fox, Suzanne Scott is the CEO now of Fox News. She had a meeting these last few days with top producers of various shows, these opinion shows. She sent a message that these producers need to be in control of the hosts and the panelists that appear. And this is in the wake of really inflammatory remarks. For example, Laura Ingraham saying that the detention centers where young babies have been taken away from their parents, that they were like summer camp. We had the infamous now Corey Lewandowski womp womp when he was told that a child with Down syndrome was separated from her parent. These are things that, you know, are going to be pretty toxic if you want to hold on to your advertisers, clearly. I would note that this Suzanne Scott, who is warning these people, apparently brought Tucker Carlson and Laura Ingraham into the shows that they have now on Fox. So I don't know what to make of it. Will it make a difference? I don't know. But it's the first time I can remember that Fox shows a little bit of anxiety about their brand.
I mean, the thing that struck me about this when I saw this news was not that they were doing it, but that it took this long and that this was something that was a news story about Fox News. Like, doesn't every television broadcaster sit down with a host and say, listen, you know, we can't have any of these problems where people are saying offensive things on the air. I mean, I know I had those conversations with people about Twitter and about stories they write. Like, why is this a new thing at Fox News?
Well, it's actually been a feature, not a bug at Fox News. And it seems to me like they've put themselves into a bit of a corner, like be aggressively pro-administration, borderline offending many millions of people, but don't be too offensive to the millions of people because the advertisers might get upset. So that's an interesting little rapids for Suzanne Scott to shoot in this job. I'm going to turn to another Me Too story that we have run in The Hollywood Reporter. This involves a woman who is a woman of color and an activist, Slide Abrams. She had allegations against two prominent men. She had claimed that Russell Simmons raped her 24 years ago and that 12 years later, AJ Calloway, who is a host on Extra, had sexually assaulted her. She wanted to make the point in this story, which I wrote, that sexual assault isn't necessarily one and done. It's not like you get unlucky and then never, ever happens to you again. And she also talked a lot about being a woman of color, accusing men of color in this piece and in an essay she wrote for Hollywood Reporter as well. But one of the main points of interest here is not only the allegations, but the fact that she took them originally to Joy Reid at MSNBC, and a process began in mid-December that ground on until April, where they demanded more and more verification and corroboration from the accuser, and then ultimately pulled the plug.
Yeah, and this brings up a larger issue, which I think is something that a lot of media organizations are dealing with right now, which is, amid this Me Too movement and so many women wanting to tell their stories, which stories do they pursue? Because they are not easy to publish. I mean, we re-reported a lot of the stuff at Hollywood Reporter that MSNBC had, and it's a task, and it's really difficult to do these kinds of stories. You have to want to do them. And I think what we're seeing with some outlets, and a lot of people say at NBC, that there just isn't the desire to do them. And, you know, a lot of people are pointing to the Billy Bush Access Hollywood tape with Donald Trump that NBC had in its possession and ultimately failed to report. And the Washington Post broke that. NBC also had the Ronan Farrow reporting on Harvey Weinstein in an early stage. And that was passed on and ultimately went to The New Yorker, which just won a Pulitzer Prize for it. So I just think that there, for whatever reason, there isn't the desire at some outlets, including NBC here. Now, others have speculated as to why that might be, but it's not just NBC. There are many outlets out there who just sort of wash their hands of this topic.
Yeah, but there's been a lot of good work done, and NBC certainly stands out. You know, you could say, well, what is CBS broken? What is ABC broken? But the truth is that NBC had both of those stories, like
that was theirs
to go forward with. So it does shine a light and make you wonder what is the issue there. And many people actually in the aftermath of our story are asking that question online. Anyway, I'm glad that we went forward. Thank you in all senses of the word, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, editorial director of The Hollywood Reporter. They say this is a big, rich town. I just come from the poet's part. Power, the most popular show on Stars, is back for a fifth season. Omari Hardwick plays James St. Patrick, or Ghost, a powerful drug dealer turned nightclub owner who can't escape his past. In the beginning of the series, Ghost tried to go legit with his club, but no surprise, that proved to be easier said than done. Still, some of Ghost's skills and connection from his life of crime have turned out to be useful when it comes to running his club.
Well, I'm a black man from the hood. Most of the guys I came up with are either dead or in jail. I live in the penthouse of my building, above the lawyers and doctors trying to get into my club. See, people take you at face value, Simon. Me? Well, I have to transform to meet everyone's expectations constantly. Truth isn't one thing because I'm not one thing.
As season 5 begins, the stakes are as high as they've ever been. Season 4 saw Ghost going to jail for a time and then facing the violent death of a family member. Ghost's wife, Tasha, played by Naturi Naughton, is at a breaking point.
I used to think we could outrun anything, that the life would never catch up to us, but I was wrong.
Power was created by our guest today, Courtney Kemp. She started writing for television a decade ago and worked with showrunners Robert and Michelle King on the ABC series Injustice and the CBS series The Good Wife. When Kemp was ready to strike out on her own, her agent set up a meeting with the rapper 50 Cent. He's a producer on Power and also plays Ghost's rival-turned-ally, Kanan. 50 Cent has faced some online backlash this week for tasteless Instagram posts mocking actor Terry Crews after Crews testified at a Senate hearing on sexual assault. Crews has been one of the few men to speak up during the Me Too movement, sharing his own experience being assaulted by another man. We taped our interview with Kemp before 50 Cent put up those posts, which he has since deleted. We asked Kemp if she wanted to comment, but the showrunner, who is unusually outspoken, as you will hear, nonetheless declined. When Kemp joined us in the studio, she told us about her childhood in Westport, Connecticut, a world away from the dark underbelly of New York she now explores in Power. I read that your dad was very much a self-made man,
mm-hmm.
came from a difficult background and just willed himself. I think he was the first black
graduate from Amos Tuck Business School.
And he really raised you in a well-to-do area.
Absolutely.
I may be naive. I read that people called you the N-word. People.
Of course. That, yeah, if you think
I'm
that's...
I'm shocked, actually.
If you're shocked, that is naive. I will call that
okay,
naive.
Okay, thank you.
Very much so. Still happening. Happens all the time.
Still happening?
Yes. Why are you surprised? I mean, I honestly, like, that is not... That for me, it's like when... Racism is surprising.
Racism does not surprise me.
Okay.
That manifestation of racism does, because most racism is supposed to be kind of undercover a little bit.
It's not. No. And in fact, there's just something that's kind of refreshing about people who are just straight up racist to your face.
Just say it.
Yeah, just say it. There's something that's less when you have to figure it out. You're having a weird feeling in the room, but you don't know what that is. You learn that sort of sixth sense. I don't think it's any different. And I'll speak to you woman to woman. You know what sexism is. So, you know, I think it's very similar to that. It's similar to the experience of being a woman in the world. And I do tell people that my showrunning experience has been more difficult as a woman than it has as a person of color. And that's because of the subject matter of my show. So people often assume that the showrunner of power would be black, but that it would be a black man, right. Not that it would be me in my J. Crew twin set. And
which you are not wearing at this moment, I would
say.
No,
but I'm wearing a very floral skirt. Very, yes. very
summery, nice mm-hmm. look. So I read, we were reading like Shakespeare at 10.
Yes, I was, because my brother brought home books from college and I read all his books. I read everything I could get my hands on. I feel like I spent a lot of time alone as a kid making up stories. Diving into literature was a way to escape. I grew up in a chaotic household. My father was incredibly successful, but that was kind of in opposition to his emotional development. And I think as a parent, and now I'm a parent, he did the best that he could. But that doesn't mean it was good enough. He struggled with parenting. He struggled with, you know, being present. And he struggled with his temper. And he struggled with having to achieve at that level.
So you went to work for the Kings. They tried to hire you on Injustice. And they did hire you on Injustice.
They hired me on Injustice, yes.
And then they eventually hired you on Good Wife. They said there was an issue.
There was an issue.
Nothing to do with you.
Nothing to do with me. There was an issue. And I went and worked on a show called Happy Town. And then Happy Town was only 6 episodes. So it ended. And the Kings called my agents and said, she's free, right? And my agent said, yes. And they said, can you send her over, please? And so that was about a third of the way through the first season of The Good Wife.
Oh, early on.
Yeah. And so then I was there for 3 years.
So after this, you're doing your own show.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could conjure up a visual of Mark Canton, the producer.
I love Mark.
With Curtis Jackson, mm-hmm. a.k.a.
50 Cent.
50 Cent. Mark Canton is a little tiny man. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Little, thin, nervous man.
Mm-hmm.
And 50 Cent is not a little, thin, nervous man.
No, but they both have a lot. They have a lot in common. I mean, in terms of their approach, which is that they're both big idea guys. Mark is very Hollywood. He's really good at relationships and building.
His genetic test comes back 100% Hollywood.
He's a strong Hollywood person, and his instincts in that way are remarkable. 50 is, again, they're both big idea guys. So this was this idea of doing a music-driven drama series, this was their big idea. I was the one who came with the things that were about my dad, the things about black male identity, the things about does your past dictate your future. All those things were me. And then when it comes right down to it, going into Shakespearean themes.
Yeah.
Those are things that I, of course, brought to it with my own education and my own background.
Well, so did they come and say, we need a showrunner? How does it connect to you?
No. They were like, we have an idea for a music-driven show. That was, I mean, that's all it was.
I'm sure.
At the same time, I was working on a blaxploitation show at that time. And Andrew Miller, who was my agent at CAA and was also on 50's team, put us in a room. I mean, it's not, I met him at Schwab's. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It was a setup thing.
Yeah, it's agented.
When he says, I want you to meet, I don't know whether to say Curtis or 50.
You can say 50 Cent. That's, I mean, I call him Curtis. He answers to everything.
Did you have a thought like he has a very intense background.
He does.
He still has a piece of a bullet in him. He's been shot 9 times.
Yes.
At once.
Yes, at once. I thought, well, welcome to Hollywood, kid. You know, I really.
Who are you welcoming? You?
Yeah, me. You know, I didn't know what to think. But luckily enough, I didn't think anything. I just thought, I'm going to go in and pitch. I'm very, very fortunate because I practice a spiritual practice that allows me to go one day at a time. So as a reference, it's like, today I'm going to meet 50 Cent. Tomorrow, I'm still going to be a mom of a relatively small child. She was a newborn-ish. She was an infant at that time. And I'm going to have to go back to juggling her with one hand while I type with the other. That's my life right now, you know?
So you didn't go forward and think, what if this, or what's he going to be like? And
huge waste of time. Right. You know, I'm going to be me no matter what. I'm going to go in prepared. I had come up with some ideas and things that I wanted to do with the story. I had some basic characters. I had Ghost. I had Tasha.
Ghost is the lead character.
Ghost is the lead character. I had his wife, Tasha. I had his best friend, Tommy. So I had some basic outlines of characters. And then when 50 and I met and we started to talk, we just started sparking back and forth. It was almost an instant connection. He understood what I was saying immediately. And he really had a story sense. I didn't expect him to be such a great storyteller and someone I could just stay on the phone with for hours. And as an actor, he works really hard.
You know, sometimes in the world of music, there's a different kind, well, not a discipline that you would have in the TV or movie business, but...
Right, a different work ethic. He's the, sort of the way opposite of what you would think. So he comes to work about an hour early. You know, he has his lines. He's kind of the exact opposite of what you would expect the rapper stereotype to be. He has no entourage. He comes by himself. You know, he brings his own barber. But other than that, he's just, he works.
And, right. I like that detail, though.
Yeah, and he's very focused. He's really, really focused.
He's serious.
Yeah, he wants the show to be huge. Well, he was lucky, right? Or he was right. He says, he always says, I knew it was going to be huge.
So when you go out to pitch Power, is it you and 50?
It was me and 50 and Chris Lighty, Andrew Miller, my agent, Mark Canton.
The producer.
Randall Emmett was there. He's another producer on the show. He was in a partnership with 50 at the time. I was the only woman.
Did you feel like anybody was like, I don't know, how can you be the showrunner because it's... this?
No, I think they liked the story I was telling. And I think it helped me a great deal that I was coming off of The Good Wife. So I was proven.
And so how many places did you pitch it?
Power, we pitched at Showtime and we pitched at FX.
And
then
Stars. So Stars is really making some moves. I mean, you're already in your fifth. You're starting your sixth, I guess.
We're about to air the fifth season, and we're in the writer's room on the sixth.
Yeah. And Chris Albrecht has a storied past at HBO. Mm-hmm. Some bad things. We got in some trouble for some very not good behavior, very, very bad. But also the taste that defined HBO for a long time.
Yes.
You know, I felt like it took a while, and now it's starting to – your show is big. I think it's their biggest. It's
by far.
It's weird, right? Because you're not the only showrunner who has this experience. You do a show that has a huge audience, and yet it doesn't get into that chattering class conversation.
Yeah, we've never been there. And I think there are a couple of reasons why. But the number one reason is that I think our network did not set out to make it a general admission show. They set out to get this specific audience and did an excellent...
An underserved audience.
Yes. And I think they... were pleasantly surprised at how well it did and how much sort of total domination of that audience it began to have. I pushed for more.
More what?
More attention to the idea that more people would be interested in the show.
So are we saying they didn't market to white audiences?
I'm saying that both 50 and I pushed very hard for Joe Shakur to be on the poster the second year.
And just to explain for radio people who...
That's Tommy. He's a white character on the show,
right.
One of the leads. This show is not a black show. The show is a multicultural show based in New York. Mm-hmm. We have had characters that are white, Korean, Serbian, Albanian, Cuban, Mexican, Dominican. We have... The show is so richly diverse and really about New York. It's been a struggle. It's been a...
Does the marketing department go, and they're like, we don't want to put the white guy in the picture?
I think that the network did not prioritize crossover. Mm. And I think we lost.
You lost. And at this point, pun terrible, you don't have the power to make them do what you want them to do.
It's not. But I think that just that the ship has sailed. You know, I think that we were.
Don't you feel like you could sort of, well, I guess it's you're well into the story at this point. Maybe it's hard.
I think our third season was an incredible season of television. It's one of my favorites. And I think if it didn't happen that year, I don't know that that's the destiny of this show. But that's okay. You know, there are some shows that never break through in a huge way. One of my favorite shows of all time is Sports Night. That is a great show. I love Sports Night. Sports Night is a perfect show. It's a jewel box of a show.
Loved it.
And didn't break through.
Right.
They were in the Chattering Class. People were watching that show, but the people who were watching it weren't the masses.
Right.
We have the other thing. The masses are watching our show, and often we don't have the chatter. So I've had in the last couple of years more and more people who would define themselves as white saying, wow, I love your show. I just started watching it. And I'll go, yeah, keep watching, you know, because it's a good show. And it has nothing to do with the race of the people on it or behind the scenes or anything like that. It's just entertainment. It's not a polemic. It's fun.
Coming up after a short break, Courtney Kemp gets real about being a showrunner and a mom. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking to Courtney Kemp, creator of the Starz drama Power. The series just started its fifth season and has already been renewed for a sixth. Before Power, Kemp had written for other people's shows. When Power started in 2014, it was her first time as the boss. When you get your own show, how does your life change?
Ha!
Drastically. No, maybe
yes.
Not. Writers' rooms are like long hours.
I don't ever have long hours in my writer's room. It's one thing that I copied from Greg Berlanti, which is that we work 10 to 6 and we don't work weekends unless it's absolutely.
God, if I ever cross over, I'm going to him.
Yeah. plus, I'm a parent. And humane workplaces attract top talent.
Mm.
If you have the best working conditions, you will get the best people.
You said something before we really started talking on mic, which I thought was important, where you said you sometimes tell people if they might have to choose. Tell women. I don't know if you tell it to men.
I don't, because they don't.
They might have to choose between having a kid and or having a show.
I do believe that for me, being a showrunner and being a mom are incompatible. I am not as good a showrunner as I would be if I were not a parent. I am not as good a parent as I would be if I were not a showrunner. That said, if you're willing to compromise and be good enough mommy and good enough showrunner, great. That's fantastic. And that's not a compromise that I made willingly. It's something that I've accepted. I can't be perfect at both of those jobs in the way that I expect perfection from myself. Now, that has to do with me having a perfectionism issue, but the perfectionism issue is also what makes me good at my job. I can't let go of all of it. It's a character defect and it is what it is. But I think young women sometimes say to me, I want my own show. And I say, do you want to work all the time? Do you want to work all the time? When your friends are having weekends and you're in the office, when your friends are going on vacation and you don't get one, are you sure you want to work all the time? Because your kid does not care that you stayed up until 4 in the morning writing. They're waking you up when they get up.
Which is probably around, you know, 4:45, right?
Right. And my daughter wakes me up at 6 a.m. regardless of what I did the night before.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, the other side of the coin is a person who has given this some thought is that and as a working mom, you are modeling something for your daughter that I know I did a story once. The stay-at-home moms feel very guilty that they're not modeling that for their daughters, and the working moms feel guilty that they're not full-time moms. So you say a no-win in a certain way.
Michelle King said it to me, and I quote this all the time because it was so smart. When I got pregnant, I came into her office and I said, Michelle, I'm pregnant. And she said, congratulations. And she hugged me and she said, from now on, you will never be in the right place ever again.
Oh.
When you are at work, you will want to be with your kid. And when you are with your kid, you will know you should be working.
Oh.
And it was totally true. Mm. Totally true. Michelle's brilliant anyway, but that is a brilliant, brilliant way of putting it. And I just think this whole push for women to have it all is, I mean, in my case, I'll just give you my case. I had three things that I was doing at once. I was showrunning, I was a wife, and I was a mother. And I had to let go of one of those, and the only one I could was wife.
Mm.
So I just don't – I don't know how you do it all, but I'd be happy to see someone do it. Just won't be me.
Well, Michelle does a version of it, but
she does.
As she explained it, right?
Yeah.
So on the topic of – we're now in a moment where it's like we're trying to be 50-50 by 2020 or
sure,
whatever.
Sure.
Although Sony TV just announced a big reorganization. And I think there's like 1.5 women that have anything like.
Oh, yeah. Oh, did you think something was going to change? I'm sorry. I'm so confused by why people think something is going to change.
Well, on the one hand, if you want to look half full, you look at like ICM is saying 50-50 by 2020 and you think maybe they'll actually do that or not. But we have a very baked into the culture system, and there are people whose only interest in life is to preserve that system, as you know. All right. I mean, I'm sure you're nodding. I think you see what I'm saying.
I'm nodding.
So you have the intersectionality issue of you're a woman and you're a woman of color, a person of color. I read a quote where you said, vis-a-vis your show being a big attraction for Black audiences, it doesn't mean they are any more inclusive in their hearts. It means they're more inclusive in their wallets.
Yes. Yeah, I'm happy to talk
about that. That's sort of a very broad, multifaceted question.
It's okay. And you're going to get such delicious quotes from me on this. But the truth is, I have not seen a shift in our business that is a practical shift that has anything to do other than with money. So for example, when Ride Along was the biggest movie in America, everyone said, oh my God, Black movies make money. Black movies have always made money. Were you not here during Blaxploitation? What are you talking about? But it is this idea that people rediscover that there's an audience of color.
They stop. Or women.
Or women. These kinds of rediscoveries that women and people of color and LGBT folks are interesting, have stories to tell. Those stories might be interesting for other people to watch. This rediscovery of it is so offensive. And that rediscovery is about dollars. It is not about inclusivity in your heart. For example, you can have 1 million Black shows in development on your network. Have you ever had a person of color to your home as a guest? All I'm saying is that there is money to be made off of us and by us that has nothing to do with I've opened my mind. All it has to do with is this a place where I could make some money? And I think that for me is this idea of like 50-50 by 2020. Well, does that mean that the women who are hired who make up the difference between now and then, does that mean those women are going to be given full faith and credit, or are they going to be stung with the affirmative action sting that we as people of color have had for years? Oh, she's only here because they had to hire a person of color.
Well, that's already going on with agents making excuses to writers who don't get jobs. Well, you know, they had to have women, so that's why you didn't get it.
Absolutely. And I will tell you, back when I started, they used to hire all the men for a television writing staff, and then they would say, we need a woman. A woman.
Yes, we've had that woman on our show more than once.
Yes, and I was that woman for a while. And then we need a woman or we need a person of color. That's why I laughed so hard. A 30 Rock had a character who was actually called Twofer. He was from Harvard and he was Black, so he was Twofer. But for me, it was I'm a woman and
you're Twofer.
I'm Twofer. You get a woman and you get a person of color in one check mark. I don't think that's changed. I just think that there is pressure now. So you have this thing that's happening between some showrunners who are like, I want to hire the writing staff I want to hire, which I believe in. I am a showrunner myself. I want to hire the writing staff I want to hire. But why is the writing staff you want to hire all straight white guys? I don't understand that. My whole staff is different from me. Why not have other people who are from other places who can represent other ideas? You know, we are dealing with a problem that is so systemic. It's not that I am a cynic, and it's not that I don't believe in 50-50 by 2020 or I don't believe in any of these things. What I believe in is that inclusivity comes from your heart. And so you have to actually get the people in the room, get to know them, and want to support them because you like their writing, not because you think, well, this is a great business decision.
Courtney Kemp is the creator of Power on Starz. Thank you for coming in.
I'm honored to be here.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can subscribe to The Business as well as other great KCRW podcasts at kcrw.com/podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.